All right, welcome in, everybody. Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Mark Long is on assignment dealing with the fisticuffs and all the other turmoil
in Gainesville. Issues in Gainesville?
Keep your damn hands off my shoes, Tony, or you'll find out if there are issues, all right? That's how we're going to roll this morning. Welcome in, Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. And I got to say right at the top, Metro Rooter at the house in the recent days for me. And I've had some serious plumbing issues at the house. Don't have them anymore because I made the call to Metro Rooter 695-1911. And the thing was, my wife called. They didn't even know it was me. It's not like they gave me any kind of special treatment. They come out on time. They take care of it. They're professional. They tell you your options. And I got a brand new toilet and a sink that works. How about that? Those are important things.
Those are very important things in modern society.
In any society, I would
crucial.
Hope. They are crucial things. All right, are you feeling good on a Wednesday? I don't know, but I kind of have this feel good feel about me about the team this week. Maybe it's because they're going to Tennessee and so many people are picking them to win.
Yeah.
This week, Tony, and maybe it's because despite the fact that this team is 0-5, the same kind of mood still permeates the locker room here and the building in terms of. Nobody is pointing fingers. Nobody is getting down about things. Nobody's happy. Don't get me wrong. Nobody's saying this is where we wanted to be or even expected to be for that matter. But they feel like the bricks are being laid. And I know people, probably a lot of fans, get tired of hearing that. But for whatever reason, I just feel today like I feel that they are being put down in the right way. And they are being laid the foundation that good things are in the offing. Maybe I'm just feeling pie in the sky, but I feel like I'm one of the more cynical people I know. And maybe it's just being in the building kind of brainwashes you a little bit, and I'm certainly open to that interpretation as well. But I just walked by Ryan Robinson's office mm-hmm. a little while ago, and he's got a box on the floor in there, and it's just stacked up with mail. I said, "Whose mail is that?" He said, "That's Blake's mail. This week, it's Wednesday, had to be 250, 300 letters, packages, what have you, just different things people sending, things to sign, just words of encouragement, all kinds of stuff like that. And I asked him, what over the years, has there been a comparable player today? He said, well, Maurice was like that. He got a ton of that kind of stuff. And that Blake, it's pretty overwhelming for one guy. He goes, you just can't put it in his locker. You would just have nothing else in your locker but all the mail that he receives. And despite the fact that this guy is going through, some rookie growing pain, certainly with the interceptions. I mean, imagine if the exact same game played out, but it was Chad Henne at quarterback. And Chad Henne had a chance to drive him down, and it was a 10-9 game, and he throws a pick six, right? But I think because people understand, A, he's a rookie quarterback, and he's going to make his mistakes, but you've seen enough good things, enough flashes, that you're willing to put up with some of the growing pains in hopes that big things are coming, and hopefully sooner rather than later. And I mean, I'm not even talking about big things like, let's go out there and rip off a string of 400-yard games. I'm just talking about getting to the point where the mistakes level off and the positive plays start to significantly outweigh them. You got to make some big plays, though. That's the one thing I don't know if even Blake Bortles can serve up if they don't have somebody making big plays around him offensively. Whether that's Storm Johnson, if he gets a chance to start this week, whether that's these receivers who last week didn't get much separation against the Pittsburgh Steelers, maybe help will come in the form of Marquise Lee this week. From what I understand, Cecil Short's probably still unlikely to go this upcoming week. Something's got to be done in that department.
Sure.
But am I crazy for having this sense of optimism at 0-5?
I don't think you're crazy. If you were honest about looking at this team's schedule, maybe you thought they had a chance to win that game on the road against Washington in week two. But outside of that, you probably thought they were going to lose the other three games in their first four.
Pittsburgh play this year, I definitely
Pittsburgh
thought that was
the
a
gettable
one, game.
Right. Pittsburgh was a gettable game. And by the way, they were in that one. And I think that the positivity that maybe some of the fans out there are feeling, and it sounds like you are as well, Mike, is the idea that the defense finally looked like what we thought it might look like coming into the season. Kept them in a game. They give up 10 points in that game. We've talked about it for the last couple of days already. I'm rewatching the game right now on the coach's tape, and one of the things I like to do, I like to pause the tape whenever Blake is letting the ball go, just to see where receivers are and their breaks and that kind of stuff. And it's remarkable how many times they're not even, they haven't broke. He's anticipating where guys are going to be on these routes very well already for a guy that's making just his second career start. I think there are some positives to look forward to with this team. I do think, though, that even with all the positivity, when he came in 2 weeks ago against Indianapolis for the first time, and they played that second half, and everyone was going nuts, and rightfully so, because your team finally looked like it had an NFL offense for a half of football, and they haven't had that for how long here in Jacksonville, where it just looked like a competent NFL offense. And I think at times here in the last couple weeks, they've had that same kind of rhythm to them, but it hasn't been a consistent rhythm. It's getting closer to a point where you stop comparing them to the Jaguars offenses of the last 3 years and start really taking a look at this team and saying, are they good enough to win in this league with what they have? And can Blake Bortles elevate the guys on this team around him? Can somebody become a playmaker? Because being better than a Blaine Gabbert-led offense isn't good enough. It needs to be an offense that is playing at a level that is good enough to help this team win games. And they're not playing at that level yet. Doesn't mean they can't get to it, but it's not there yet. And in large part, that's because of all the youth.
Well, and, you know, honestly, what they had last week wasn't near good enough. I mean, for an NFL, even, you know, with this optimism, they had 9 points offensively in this game, 3 field goal drives, and they had the ball for 25 minutes despite having an 8-minute drive to open up on their first possession.
Sure.
So really didn't control the football very much beyond that. And you look around and you say, wow, it's understandable. We understand the reasons why, but it doesn't make me, as I watch a game, you watch a game with me, or a lot of it, Tony, I'm still screaming at the game, at the mistakes that are being made and things like that. But, you know, if Pittsburgh played without Antonio Brown, without Marcus Wheaton, without Heath Miller, what would their offense look like? That's basically what the Jags are doing, because their top, a couple of their top receivers, however you want to rank the guys, Cecil Shorts was expected to lead the way this year. He's this team's Antonio Brown, for good or bad, whether he measures up to him or not.
Right.
He's their number one guy. Mercedes Lewis is this team's Heath Miller, much more comparable, even comparison to make there. So without that, I mean, if they're able to put any kind of points up on the board, and they really haven't this year, they haven't, you know, top 17 points this year. But if they are, you scratch your head and I guess you try to figure out why, and maybe it is because if the line starts to play a little bit better, which it seemingly everyone you talk to graded it on a higher level this past week than it had played at any point this year.
Sure.
Some of that's the Austin Pastor influence. Some of that is just a couple of rookies now have played a month and they're going to start progressing. They're seeing more. Brandon Linder has been pretty solid from the beginning, but Bowanko's starting to catch up. And even the left side played a little better last week.
I get a little bit leery of the comparison, because I feel like, and we continue to do this, we're comparing them to where this offensive line was 2 weeks ago, where this offensive line was a month ago. And the comparison needs to start being made to, is it good enough
for the NFL?
For the NFL.
Right. No, I hear you.
You know, I get that they're improving. And
that's the same thing with the running game. Right.
I'm glad that it's improving, but is it good enough to win in the NFL? It doesn't need to be better than last week. It needs to be good enough
to
win.
It needs to be good.
Right.
Right. You don't need to run for more yards than the Jags have. You don't need, you know, we're so excited about Storm Johnson based on 4 carries for 27 yards.
Right.
That says more about what came in the first 4 weeks of the season than anything Storm Johnson did yesterday. Guys all the time pop in off the bench and go 4 carries for 27 yards. Look what Anton Smith is doing Atlanta right now on about 4 touches a game. He's scored 4 touchdowns, and several of them have been of the 50-plus yard variety.
Right.
So guys in a short sample size, turn your head. And nobody is putting Anton Smith in the Pro Bowl, but he's opened eyes this year. Storm Johnson, I really do hope he gets a start this week. And, you know, rookie be damned, man. Right now, what you've been running out there is not working. And, in fact, today, the Fan Feedback Spotlight asks you exactly about that. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships presents the Fan Feedback Spotlight. If Storm Johnson does, in fact, get the start this week, or at some point in the near future, how much do you think that impacts the running game in a positive way? What your expectations be? But the way it was asked, particularly for this week, what are your expectations against Tennessee if Storm Johnson gets a start? My question on that is, what does that mean in terms of touches? Because right now, the entirety of the backfield, absent the quarterback, take out scrambles, he's getting about 10 carries a game.
Right.
And that's not enough to get any kind of ground game going. And that's 10 carries a game in which it was a one-possession game.
Right. It's a little bit surprising that you're throwing the ball 30 times and running it 15 in a game that was going
36-11 this week.
The way that game was going, it didn't make a whole lot of sense as far as the play calling, which, you know, when people are calling and saying, why is the play calling too so conservative? It's like, well,
it's not.
They're throwing the ball on first down virtually every time.
But the throws are not, you know, they're throwing a lot of stuff less than 15 yards. And I guess it's conservative in that regard.
Maybe.
But
again, I'm going back and rewatching it. I don't feel like the play calling was all that conservative. I felt like Blake took what was available to him. And again, the windows aren't real big for this offense right now because there's a bunch of guys out there who don't know how to run NFL routes, who don't know how to get separation in the NFL. And by the way, there's a young offensive line in front of all that too. I mean, it's all trying to come together at the exact same time. There were more opportunities to make plays in the run game in that game on Sunday than this team took advantage of. And Jeff Logman mentioned the play yesterday. I noticed that while the game was going on live, where Toby Gerhart had a play where it was one gap over. I mean, it's right in front of him.
There's a Twitter pic going around. I'm sure you've seen it.
Watching the game, they showed the replay. I was like, how did he not see that? How does an NFL running back who's been in the league as long as Toby Gerhart has been not see that cut? Because it's right in, I mean, he's running to it. And instead he just runs up Polanco's hindside and gets 2.5 yards. And it really could have been a 15, 20-yard play.
By the way, just because Tony does have good sources here in the building doesn't mean that's why he's able to have access to the coach's tape, so to speak. Go to NFL.com and pay $20 and you can watch every game.
That's right.
In the league, for that matter. They give you the All-22. They give you the TV broadcast. They give you everything. So if you want to go back and be your own analyst, you can absolutely do that as well. If you want to get in today, 641-1010 is the number. Mark Long on hiatus today. David Garrard in tomorrow and Ryan O'Halloran on Friday. We got Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com coming up. Going to go around the league with some issues, including, according to sources, a return to Los Angeles imminent. But guess which franchise is not even being mentioned in these stories anymore?
Hallelujah.
Isn't that a refreshing change of pace? So we'll do that coming up. We'll take your calls a little bit later. And again, I invite you to weigh in on the fan feedback spotlight. As Storm Johnson gets the call at running back, what are your expectations for the running game this week? We'll talk about how close we feel Marquise Lee and Cecil Shorts may be to returning, and what we can expect as the Jags go into Nashville to take on the Titans this week. And it's all coming up today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Again, Metro Rooter, I support my sponsors. I use them myself. If I've got an issue, I'm going to call on the people that support me because I know they do a tremendous job, and that includes Metro Rooter, 695-1911. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. You can tweet the program at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren, and of course, post your thoughts on the Facebook.com/Jaguars Today Facebook page. 641-1010, the phone line to get in as well. We'll take calls beginning in about 25 minutes. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com. Coming up next on the Garber Auto Mall Hotline here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, cross-Canadian ragweed, I believe you. I think Lauren's trying to say we believe. Either that or she's saying I'm smoking that ragweed for believing.
Okay, I'm not smoking any ragweed. So yes,
no,
I do believe.
On.
You asked if we were optimistic. Yes.
I make too much money to smoke ragweed. let's be honest. All right. I'm just kidding, people. I'm just kidding.
Your principal when you were younger would be so proud.
Consume only legal intoxicants and do so responsibly. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM, Jaguars Today. Let's say hello to Mike Florio on the Garber Auto Mall Hotline. Good morning, Mike. How are you, bud?
Hey, I'm doing great, Mike. How are you, buddy?
We're doing all right. I'm very, you know, not that to us this has not been an issue for a while. You and I have talked about this on your various shows in recent days, but nice to see a story that you said you've got an NFL source that says the league is really wanting to get a team back in Los Angeles in the next 12 to 24 months, and the Jags are not even a mention or an inference or any of that stuff. It feels good to be out of the mix, but how serious do you think this is? I mean, they tried and failed. Obviously, it's a big market. Do you think we're going to see this sooner rather than later?
I think it's more serious than it's been at any time in the 20 years since the Raiders and the Rams both left. Now, there has been plenty of talk, and I think the NFL likes to talk about putting a team in L.A., putting a team in London. I think that that headline generates interest, generates expectation, generates leverage for efforts to build stadiums in other cities. But in recent months, any time the topic comes up with someone in the know, I get that cat that ate the canary smile, like this really is happening this time. And someone who's very plugged in with these kinds of things told me in no uncertain terms on Sunday that it's happening within 12 to 24 months. And it will be between the Raiders, Rams, and Chargers, up to two of those teams. All three are in great position to exit their current leases. Now, the owners have to approve it. There would be a relocation fee that undoubtedly is going to be driven up by the $1.4 billion paid by Terry and Kim Pegula for the Bills. But the bottom line is the NFL is very intent on getting back to L.A., and 12 to 24 months is the current timetable that the league believes exists. Doesn't mean the league's right, but that's what they currently believe.
Hey, Mike, it's Tony. Nice to talk to you again. I know the multiple investigations continue regarding what is going on with Ray Rice in Baltimore. When can we expect a resolution from one or any of those?
Well, no one really knows the answer to that because Robert Mueller, the former FBI director, has been given basically a blank check to take as much time as he needs. There's been a suggestion it'll happen by the end of the month. Mark Murphy, the Packers CEO, said last week that they expected it to be done this week, or at least they hoped it would be done this week. They haven't even interviewed Ray Rice yet. So anybody who's ever been connected in anything like this knows that there are multiple rounds, multiple levels. You talk to a group of people initially, you get some information, you have follow-up questions, you get more information. Then you have more follow-up questions because as more information comes out, to do a thorough and effective investigation, you've got to keep asking questions. You've got to continue to be curious, and you can't stop until all reasonable and relevant questions have been answered. So it wouldn't surprise me if it takes even longer than that. That's the Mueller investigation. Then the NFL Players Association doing its own investigation. Ray Rice has an appeal pending of his indefinite suspension. That will culminate in a courtroom-style hearing at which Ray Rice, Roger Goodell, and others will most likely testify. And then on top of all of that, there's still a chance that Ray Rice is going to file a claim against the Ravens for terminating him in violation of the labor deal. So there are multiple levels, multiple fronts, and the ultimate question in every case, what did the NFL know? When did the NFL know it? And as some believe, why did the NFL even need to know anything more than what it already knew about what happened in that elevator?
Yeah, that one, and I agree, they should have known, but we beat that to death pretty
but
well.
What do they expect it to look like when a guy knocks out somebody?
I agree.
What do you expect it to look like?
It was pretty plain language in what he did.
Yeah.
Mike.
Yeah, and was it a fist? Was it a hand? Was it an elbow? Who cares?
Does it really matter? People are saying it's so much better if he slapped her hard enough to cause her to either hit her head against the railing or knock her out just from hitting her with a hand. What difference does it make? Did it really? But the issue of him filing a grievance against the Ravens. Look, maybe I'm just dumb here, and it's quite possible, but teams have the right to cut players, right? I mean, when the Broncos cut Matt Prater, was that a double punishment because he had been suspended? Or did they decide, you know what, at this point we want to move on without Matt Prater, we're going to play with Brandon McManus as our kicker now? Don't NFL teams have the right to release a guy anytime they want?
Yeah, they have the right to do that, but you better be able to make a persuasive case that it's not the imposition of discipline, that you're not cutting the player because of what he did off the field. You're cutting the player because of your assessment of what he can do for you on the field. And the Ravens stayed behind Ray Rice. He was in the plans. He was part of the team. They embraced him. They defended him. They made excuses for him. And then the video comes out, and within 3 or 4 hours after that, he's gone. It's going to be hard for them to claim with a straight face they didn't cut him because of the video. And if we pour over all of the things the team representatives have said over the last 30 days, my guess is we'll find enough ammunition to say you guys clearly cut him because of the video, and that's the only reason. And so the argument would be you're entitled to one punishment, either by the team or by the league. And the league suspended Ray Rice for 2 games, and they knew what he did or should have known what he did or didn't need to know the specifics of what he did. They knew what he did, and so you can't punish the guy again. You can't fire him because of it. You can't suspend him indefinitely because of it. I mean, we're talking about $3.5 million hanging in the balance here, because if the Ravens improperly cut him, that's the remainder of the $4 million base salary minus the 2-game suspension that he didn't challenge, but it's still $3.5 million. And you know, for a guy who may never play again in the NFL, I don't see any reason to not pursue that, especially if you believe that the Ravens knew what happened and now they're reacting based on PR concerns to the release of that video.
Do you believe that the NFL has reacted the correct way since the video has been made available to the public and the stance that the NFL is now taking against domestic violence? Is that cast a shadow a little bit on how they've basically viewed and handled these situations in the past? I mean, you said it. They suspended Ray Rice for 2 games knowing that he had knocked this woman out. Maybe they saw the video, maybe they didn't, but that's kind of been the NFL stance for a long time on these kind of issues. Do you think they've handled it right since it became so public?
I think it's hard to separate what they're doing when we look at PR versus doing the right thing. How much of this is aimed at saving people's jobs? How much of this is aimed at keeping sponsors from jumping ship? How much of this is real? And how committed is the NFL to truly addressing the root cause of the problem? And here's the root cause of the problem. When the NFL decided at some point in the last 20 years that it's going to serve as a separate and surrogate police force and tell players what they can and can't do when they're not on the clock, when it's not even football season, and hold them accountable for the things that they do when they're not at work, when they've got 8 months that they're not ever doing anything to earn any money from the teams. If you're going to take on that responsibility, you better do it right. It better be transparent, it better be consistent, it better be fair, and it better be reasonable. And even as recently as August 28th, when the new domestic violence policy was announced, there was a huge gap in that anyone could have seen. What do we do from the period of time between when a guy's arrested for domestic violence and the time the case is resolved? And they gave zero thought to that. And that blew up a week after the Rice tape came out with Adrian Peterson and Greg Hardy and Ray McDonald and Jonathan Dwyer. And so I don't know that I have faith in proactivity from the NFL. Everything is always reactive. We have to do something because we've been made to look bad. Oh, we look bad. We better do this. Oh, this is a big deal. We better. I'd love to see a real push to identify these potential embarrassments and fix them before they become embarrassments. And I've yet to see that from the NFL.
But in the landscape we're in right now, Mike, what do you think? Just your personal opinion. What is appropriate? You know, we see in Gainesville at the college level now, Treyon Harris has been accused of sexual assault, but not charged with anything, and he's suspended immediately by the University of Florida. Ray McDonald has been accused but not charged. He's not suspended by the 49ers. What do you think is the appropriate reaction to take when there's a public charge but not a legal charge against one of these players?
There needs to be a team of investigators employed by the NFL who are ready at a moment's notice to go to the location where the team is, where the incident happened, wherever the evidence is, to go there to find out what happened as quickly and as efficiently as possible and make recommendations to someone other than the commissioner, someone who's in charge of meeting out discipline without regard to any favors to teams or who do we owe for this and who do we owe for that and who have we hammered in the past. And forget all that. Case by case, look at what happened, make a decision about what should happen to the player pending the resolution of the case. Should he be suspended with pay? Should he be suspended without pay? Should we go ahead and come to the conclusion that he did what he did based upon the evidence? Is it so overwhelming that we believe, not a jury beyond a reasonable doubt, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. Does the NFL's team of investigators believe that this person did what he's accused of doing? Make that decision and figure out something, some way to handle that player quickly and thoroughly and consistently and transparently. That's what they need to do. That's why I think arguably the NFL looked even worse with the flying by the seat of the pants handling of the Adrian Peterson, Greg Hardy, and Ray McDonald case. And I think today still there are Vikings fans and Panthers fans who look at this and say, wait a minute. Why is Adrian Peterson and Greg Hardy not playing, but Ray McDonald is? No one's ever satisfactorily explained that from the NFL. And that's who needs to be handling it. You get the teams involved, and you're going to be tempted to say, well, let's find a way to let this guy play. I mean, we're paying him anyway. We want to win football games. Teams are never going to be able to make the good decision about this. The league needs to have a separate arm. If you're going to be in the business of policing players away from work, which is a separate philosophical discussion. But if you're going to be in that business, you got to do it the right way.
Right, without going down that separate philosophical road. I mean, I would think they're never going to have the resources available to them that law enforcement has.
Oh, but they've got the resources. They need to go out and get them.
Right, but if
they've got the financial resources.
Okay, but if law enforcement investigates something and deems it's not worthy of a criminal charge, but if the league says, well, we think this guy did something here, I mean, isn't that a slippery slope to go down if, you know, they are setting up a separate, their own internal judicial system? And maybe I'm wrong, but what do you think?
The whole thing is a slippery slope. That's the problem. When you decide, and I think the NFL got this wrong, because the assumption was made, it's bad for business for us to not be taking separate action against guys who get in trouble off the field. It's bad for us to do that. So we need to take action against these guys. We need to supplement the punishment that is given to them by the criminal justice system or the civil justice system if the person ultimately gets sued for their behavior. We need to do something else in order to maintain public confidence in our product. Well, maybe you don't. Maybe you're better off to just let anything that happens out of your workplace, let the appropriate authorities be responsible for it. Whatever happens, happens. And maybe that's less of a hit from a PR standpoint than trying to do it and doing it in a way that doesn't do it, that creates separate issues and concerns about whether or not the NFL has the right level of integrity and competence to do these things. So bottom line is, if you aren't going to do it right, don't do it at all.
Mike, I know we only have a couple minutes left with you. You've had your disagreements with the Cat in the past, your disagreements with Jackson DeVille. What was your reaction to the terrible towels Ebola joke on Sunday?
Well, my typical approach this is a philosophy that I've employed for years. When your enemy is dancing near the edge of the cliff, you just stand back and watch.
Why's he got to be your enemy, Mike? Why's he got to be your enemy?
He's not my enemy. Look, I didn't start it with him. I tried to finish it. My mistake was trying to finish it. I didn't start it with him. I don't want to revisit the past on an issue like this, but
I had no reaction.
It didn't surprise me. It didn't surprise me at all, based on my experience with Mr. DeVille, that he found himself in an avoidable predicament.
All right.
How's it
any different than referring to somebody as a locker room cancer, which kills millions of people? Is that not heartless? Is that not cruel? My mom died of cancer. How can you dare say that? How can you make light of that?
Well, mine did too. Mine did too.
Mine actually didn't. I'm just making the point that somebody might make.
Oh.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm just saying in general. I mean, I'm just saying in general, this one, you know, I think people are just, my opinion, this is my personal opinion, people are way too, PR sensitive and PC about the whole issue that, you know.
But here's the thing. I mean, I criticized Steve Tisch, the Giants co-owner, last week for making some goofy claim. You know, are you worried about going to Dallas? TMZ. This guy talks to TMZ more than he talks to the regular media. They asked him if he's concerned about going to Dallas because that's where the guy with Ebola is. They all know the Cowboys will get it before we do. Here's the difference. I mean, cancer is something that isn't communicable. It's not contagious. We're dealing with a modern-day plague, potentially, where there's this sense among plenty of people that we're right on the edge of a knife as to whether or not there's going to be a pandemic, and it scares a lot of people. We're still in that fresh stage where that word strikes fear into the hearts of a lot of people, and that's what I think makes Ebola jokes. I hope we soon get to a point where we can comfortably make Ebola jokes, because that will mean that this fear and this threat have gone away.
What about bird flu jokes? Can we go bird flu jokes?
Bird flu is good because nobody worries about bird flu anymore.
Maybe they should.
I don't want to get too far off the grid with this, but I feel like I can't get the straight story anywhere on whether this really is a threat or not. Because you've got one camp of the news media and the commentators who act like we're all going to die, and then you've got the other extreme where they're like, oh no, you know, believe the government on this. Like we always do, we believe the government on everything else. I mean, we're conditioned to mistrust the government, but we're supposed to believe them when they say there's absolutely no chance of this becoming a big deal. I don't, and I assume the truth is somewhere in the middle, and I don't know how to feel about it.
Just became NPR. Let's go. let's finish with this thought on Adrian Peterson, who's pushing for a hearing or a trial date for December 1st. Mike, what's the likelihood, in your opinion, if he is either A, found not guilty, or B, found guilty? If he's found guilty of child abuse, will he play for the Vikings? Will he play in the NFL again? Will he be radioactive? If he is found not guilty, the Vikings immediately reinstate him and get him right back on the field.
Well, if he's guilty, the question becomes, how much of a suspension does he get after he's found guilty? And what credit does he get for basically time served for this paid suspension? Will they take away money for 10, 12, 14 weeks that he misses and say that's your suspension? The NFL's in a weird spot on this, because how do you discipline a guy you've already been disciplining with pay for weeks and weeks and weeks until this case is resolved? If he's exonerated, if he has a trial the week of December 1, and by that Friday the 5th, he has an acquittal from a jury that refuses to find beyond a reasonable doubt that he's worthy of being convicted, at that point you have to let him come back. And the Vikings have to decide, do we put him on the field or do we cut him? I think if he gets fully exonerated, there's no excuse for not bringing him back, and then he could finish the season with the Vikings. And you know what? The fans may not be all that thrilled about him coming back, but if they're right around 500 and they're a game or two away from a playoff berth, and Adrian Peterson makes them better down the stretch, and they're going to pay him whether he's there or not, I don't know why you don't bring him back.
All right, there he goes. Mike Florio, good to catch up with you, man. It's been a while. I know that everybody feels the same way, but I do. And
we
Tony
love
and I
you,
are the
Mike.
Ones who host
yeah.
the show.
So, when's the last time I have said anything negative about Jacksonville in any setting?
About Jacksonville. People, look, I'm not saying you said anything, but, you know.
People pick their corners,
people
Mike. You know how this is.
People love the cat, and, you know, if you're on the other, you and the cat are, you know, at crossroads.
The cat started it, man. Hey, man,
whatever. They don't care. Nobody cares. I don't know who started. I don't really care.
By the way, Mike, I like the cat and I like you.
Yeah. So,
while we have you, what have your impressions been of Blake Bortles through 2.5 weeks?
I think it's too early to tell. I mean, I like the fact that he can extend plays with his feet. And, you know, I think there's hope there. I just think that there's still a lot of heavy lifting that needs to be done to improve the roster before we're going to see his full potential.
All right, there he goes. Mike Florio. Mike, enjoy your work, as always. We'll catch you on Pro Football Talk Live. We'll catch you everywhere, man, NBC Sports Network and Sunday Night Football and all the great stuff that you do. We appreciate your time, man.
See you, pal.
See you. There he goes. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, here with us with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. Dwayne Grott's cleared to practice today.
Yeah.
For the Jacksonville Jaguars to come back, discuss that. And what does that mean for the cornerback position versus Demetrius McCray? That should be an interesting battle to see how that plays out this week. It's Jaguars Today. Phone lines open to you at 641-1010 here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Rushy, one little victory. I guess this is really not a ragweed theme, is it? Let's get one this week. Come on.
Just one little victory.
One little victory is all we're asking
for. Let's have Delanie Walker once again saying,
crying.
Mad.
I'm so embarrassed.
You should be embarrassed already. I mean, come on. You've had your quarterback in place for 4 years.
That's right.
All right, and you still suck. So what's the issue?
It's Delaney? Interesting reading their perspective of things, though, the Titans' perspective.
They have a perspective?
this is how they're getting back off the schneid.
Right.
The Jags are coming back to town. We haven't won one in a month. Let's go get this one, boys.
And they're not great in many of the statistical categories, but they're still better than the Jags in 8 out of 10 of them.
Boom.
Who cares? I mean, all that matters is the one category is most points on Sunday.
Did the NFL start until last Sunday? I forget.
Well, the Titans would counter with
28-3. That's what I'll counter with.
Well, you can counter with that. They would counter with 1999. And that's a pretty persuasive counter.
Yep,
to be
that's
honest
a bad
with
one.
You. I mean, that's a bad one. Let's be honest. That is a bad one. But in the short term, let's shut their traps on Sunday. I know a lot of Jaguar fans love to shut Florio's trap as well.
I know.
Ain't going to happen. I'll just tell you right now. You're going to be disappointed if you think he's never coming back on.
We know this because we talk to him every year out at the Super Bowl, too. But there are 32 fan bases that are convinced that Mike Florio
hates them.
That personally has a grudge against their fans and their city. And it's funny to me. I mean, people think he comes on and talks negatively. Well, we ask him about all the dirty things going on around the National Football League. It's not exactly something where he can come on and talk happily about the NFL. We're asking about Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson and all these different things, and somebody's going to lose their franchise to LA, it sounds like, sometime in the next year. These are not happy times for the NFL when we have Mike Florio on. So, yeah, it might come off sounding a little bit negative.
It's
that's
the rumor
question,
mill. It's
right?
the dirty underbelly. It's whatever you want to talk about in that
although
regard.
Although I do love his just the sarcasm of Florio with the Jackson question. When your enemy is dancing next to a cliff, you don't say anything.
Yeah, that's look. I get it. You want you support your guy Jackson DeVille. We love Jacksonville. I like Florio too, and they can fight it out amongst themselves. Doesn't matter to me.
Entertaining for me.
Yeah, and like this we get from at Jag Fanatic. I'm not picking on him, but I hear this all the time. I'm using this as an example. This is a tweet at the end of a string of tweets. He says, and he hates this city. I said, all right, show me an example of him hating Jacksonville. And the reply was, well, you know better than me, but his voice drives me crazy. Well, you see, you just jumped from he hates Jacksonville to I don't like listening to his voice. Okay? I mean, so, you know, if you hate him for specific reasons because he and Jackson DeVille got into a war of words, whatever. Okay, that's fine.
He's a sarcastic guy, and his website is sarcastic.
That's probably why I like him.
Right. You're going to go read. He's going to give you his opinion on stuff.
I'm going to look into sarcasm and try it myself.
Generally going to be no way.
Probably not. I'll think about it, though. I'll think about that for 2015. All right, Tony. Dwayne Grotz on the practice field cleared to practice today.
Yeah.
There was a feeling amongst the punditry in the building that we may have been getting a changing of the guard regardless, or a changing of the cornerback, as the case may be.
Sure.
With Demetrius McCray, perhaps if that game had continued to play out the way it was playing out in San Diego and Dwayne Grotz didn't pick up his play, that Demetrius McCray might have earned the start regardless, not just because Dwayne Grotz was unavailable. My question to you is, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday with Logman, is it, you know, people want to say, wow, what a miss. Here's a team that's struggling. I hear T-Wig talk about this all the time. You got, it's great if you had Demetrius McCray as a seventh round pick, but you're replacing a guy who you thought was going to be really good as a third round pick. First of all, if you expect any GM to hit on every draft pick, you're crazy.
Sure.
But is it, if you want to go back and redraft and look at exactly who they could have gotten with that pick, if that's the one that stands out to you, fine, have at it. Do your thing. But if you get a guy in the seventh round, if you draft two corners, and one's in the third, one's in the seventh, and the one in the seventh turns out to be a lot better than the one in the third, and we don't even know if it's going to end up that way. Well, let's say it goes down that path. But the other guy can be a contributor on your football team, maybe he ends up being your nickel corner, maybe he's depth, whatever. Is that such a bad thing? I just don't think that's such a terrible situation. I don't think it's such a terrible waste of resources.
Big picture, when you look at the Jaguars secondary going forward, they probably are going to have to address free safety at some point. Josh Evans, I'm not sure, is going to be the future of that position. They expect more out of Cyprian than I'm guessing they've seen. I think we're all still waiting for those wow plays from Cyprian coming down into the box, and hopefully they're going to be coming soon. But you look outside of that. Alan Ball is going into, what, his eighth, ninth year now? I mean, how much longer is he going to be an effective part of that secondary? They have Colvin, who they selected in the fourth round that they believe in. Will Blackman, how much longer is he going to play? The point being that there are multiple positions that they are going to have to find answers for in the very near future. Now, if Dwayne Grotz can't play that left cornerback spot, but maybe he's good enough to start at right corner in 2 years because Alan Ball's out and just isn't an effective player anymore, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with Aaron Colvin if he comes in as a fourth-round pick and takes over that spot from Alan Ball next year? Or McCray, and McCray can transfer over to the right side too. And in 2 years, we have McCray, and we have Colvin, and we have Grotz on the field together. What's wrong with that, and who cares what positions they're playing if they're all playing those positions effectively? I think that there's a lot of writing off of Dwayne Grotz pretty darn early in this process. Now,
Going into the season, didn't you feel pretty good about
Dwayne Kratz? I felt pretty good about him. But I think that there were a lot of things that were going wrong in that secondary, too. I'm not saying that he wasn't part of it. He was part of the problem. I don't view a third-round pick being a seventh-round pick coming in and outplaying him as a bust in the draft. I view it as this is a guy who obviously needed more time than he got to get ready to play in the National Football League. Maybe he turns into something, maybe he doesn't. But if you found a player in the seventh round, you found a player in the seventh round. To me, it doesn't matter so much where you find guys that can play, as long as you're finding guys that can play. And if you fall into somebody in the seventh round, so be it. It doesn't bother me at all.
Again, occasionally you'll probably ace the draft, right? Where you have six or seven picks and everybody turns out to be some kind of level of contributor for your football team. It's rare, but it probably happens on occasion. I know for a fact that because I've done it, that we've all talked about the decision to draft Brian Anger when Russell Wilson was available. But to me, that is, we're talking about, that was the cherry on the Gene Smith incompetent sundae, that here's the shining, crowning example. And that's not a shot at Brian Anger. He's been a good player. And Brian Anger didn't say I should be drafted wherever or over Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson's turning into one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League. And that's why it burned so much, but it was the one thing. I'm sure that Dave Caldwell, we're going to look back at some point in time and say, man, could have drafted this guy instead of that guy. But if you're hitting on 5 out of 7 and those guys, and it's the other two, that to me becomes, what's the big deal? Now, I don't think we have a clear enough picture after one full season with one rookie class and 5 games with another to know who the hits and who the misses are.
Sure.
By the way, and we feel like Blake Bortles is going to be a hit. Look, I'll say Ryan Leaf was 2-0 as a starter his first year with the San Diego Chargers. I'm not saying Blake's Ryan Leaf. My point is, no matter how you feel good or bad about any of this year's rookie class, you really can't know. Even Brandon Linder, who seems to have been the one guy since day one who has looked the part, right? There have been very few questions about him. You hope that continues unabated, but there's no guarantee. Plenty of guys have had strong rookie seasons and then faded in their careers. There's a mix across the board, and it's impossible to tell right now where all these guys are going to end up. But if you're only talking about a few picks that are misses that you wish, oh, wow, we could have drafted this, we could have got this guy in to help, it's going to happen. You're going to drive yourself crazy in that regard. It's going to be fascinating to watch, I think, the rest of this week to see where those two guys are compared to each other, because my best guess is right now, based on the way Demetrius McCray played, he will start this Sunday against the Titans, even with Crosby.
No, I think he's earned that opportunity. Look, there was a play early on in that game where he maybe gave a little bit too much of a cushion, but he came up, made the tackle, got Antonio Brown out of bounds. The two plays he made in goal-to-go situations against Antonio Brown were so impressive, and the fact that he drove on the ball the way that he did, was able to cover that guy. I mean, he's out on an island with Antonio Brown, one of the quickest receivers in the National Football League, and found a way to win those matchups in that situation where you knew before the snap, that's where Ben was coming. I mean, you knew before that play started, yeah, I'm going after 35 because he's out there on my man, and he found a way to make those plays. Maybe that's the kind of push that Dwayne Gratz needed. If there's people out there who want to look at it as they missed on Gratz, maybe they did. You know what? Maybe they did. But if they found a guy in McCray, but he's out of Appalachian State, that may have affected his draft status. I don't know. We knew this was a big physical guy when he came into the league. Didn't get much of an opportunity to play last year. If he's good, then who cares? That's just how I look at it. It's, if they found a guy that can play the cornerback position, I don't fault them so much for maybe missing on a third-round pick. Doesn't bother me so much.
Yeah, I hear you. And by the way, nobody in this room is writing off Dwayne Gratz at any point. Let's see how the whole thing plays out. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday, and we've got this date in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL, and Tony's favorite pop quiz coming up. It's Jaguars Today, live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, what happened on this date in football history? October 8th, over the years, a lot of things happened on this date in football history. If I could get the computer to jump to the right screen, I tell you, some of them. How about this one, Tony? October 8th, 1933, the Boston Redskins running back Cliff Battles became the first player to top 200 yards in a game when he went for 215 in a 21-20 victory over the New York Giants. It does, all kidding aside, does seem like a lot of those early things all involved the New York Giants. I guess there weren't that many teams in the league back in the day. It just seems like we've had a lot of those kind of things. We talked about Steve Largent the other day. Broke Harold Carmichael's record streak of 127 consecutive games with a reception. Well, that streak began on this date in 1972 for Carmichael. And Dan Marino in 1995 broke Fran Tarkenton's NFL career completions record. Birthdays on this date of note, Tony Eason was part of that quarterback class, along with John Elway, Jim Kelly, Dan Marino. Who else do you have in there? Ken O'Brien, who was the other one? Todd Blackledge, right? I think it was Blackledge, was the sixth one. Six QBs in the first round, three Hall of Famers, three others. That's what you had. The state in football history brought to you this week by the by our friends at the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price while providing you unsurpassed customer service. Fencing is an investment in your home or business, and the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville will make sure that you get everything you pay for with your investment. They'll give you a professional free estimate at your convenience, 268-1638, or visit bestfencejacks.net for more info. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Congratulations are in order for Mr. and Mrs. Terry Pegula. The owners unanimously approved the sale of the Buffalo Bills to Pegula today. The Wilson family will be getting $1.4 billion for the franchise. Terry Pegula also owns the Buffalo Sabres of the National Hockey League. He's allowed to own both because apparently they're in the same city, so they don't have beef with that. They might if they were in different cities. The NFL is attempting to determine whether or not a fan in Detroit over the weekend used a laser pointer to try and distract Bills players during the game. Bills holder Colton Schmidt said that he had a laser pointed at him while he was holding on a 50-yard attempt that was missed in the third quarter. The Bills reported the issue during the game to security officials. Laser pointers are banned in all NFL stadiums, and fans using them can be ejected or even banned for life from attending any future events at that location. The New Orleans Saints have signed tight end Tom Crabtree to take the roster spot of Jarris Bird, who was placed on IR after suffering a torn lateral meniscus on Sunday. Bird, a prized free agent acquisition for an improving Saints defense during the offseason, but as we've all seen, Mike, the Saints defense collapsed over the first month of the year. Those in the know have said that Bird has been a liability to this point in the Saints' back four, so maybe losing Bird helps them in the short term at least. That was a pretty good defense last year in New Orleans, and this year they have been anything but. They've been terrible in the National Football League, and that's the driver on the NFL.
Well, here's your pop quiz today, Tony. Based on what we heard a moment ago about our buddy Cliff Battles becoming the first player to top 200 yards rushing in a game with 215 back in 1933, I need from you, with a three strikes and you're out rule, how many of the top 10 single-game rushers in National Football League history you can give me, and I will tell you that Freddie Taylor topping out at 234 is good for a tie for 23rd best all-time with Tiki Barber for a single-game performance. So who do you have in the top 10?
It's top 10 single games?
Top 10 single-game rushing totals in National Football League history.
Adrian Peterson.
Tops
I think
the
got
list.
Close to 300.
Yeah, 296 for AP.
He broke the record of, I know, Corey Dillon had it for a while.
Corey Dillon did have it for a while at 278, but he was not the record that was broken. It was since broken by another player before Adrian Peterson topped the mark. And is actually Corey Dillon's mark has been broken again, but below the threshold of Adrian Peterson.
Okay.
So you got two.
Corey Dillon broke the mark of Walter Payton.
Yes, he did, with 275 for the Chicago Bears versus the Vikings back in 1977. By the way, most of these, in today's passing era, most of these came in the last two decades, and really maybe even more recently than that. Only a couple of them pre-1990, and Walter Payton was one of them.
So you said somebody had broken Dillon's record before Peterson did.
That is correct. Someone held the mark. Corey Dillon did it in 2000. Someone broke it in 2003. And then Adrian Peterson snapped it on November 4th, 2007.
03. Was that the...
Don't you get him to 300 if he's at 296, by the way?
I know.
Was it that game, though? Maybe he did have like a... I think maybe they were setting... Was that the game... No, it's November 4th. That couldn't have been the game. What was the game where he was going for... They were going for the playoffs and like...
That was 2 years ago.
And what was the mark in
he
that?
He was trying to get to the all-time rushing mark. He was...
Oh, that's what it was. Yards. Right. The single season mark. That's right. And he needed, like, if he had broke his last run for a touchdown of like 20 yards, he would have gotten
it. Was 03 the... I'll take a guess here. Jamal Lewis.
Jamal Lewis,
that's
correct.
Was that the year he went for 2,000?
No, I don't believe it's the year he went for 2,000. I thought that was... Like 2000, in the year 2000 or 2001, but I might be wrong about that. But all right, so you got Peterson, Lewis, Dillon, Payton. Who else you got? Top 10. There are 11 guys because there's a tie for 10th, and there are three more active players who are in the top 10 for a single game.
Well, among active players, I know he's had a couple just huge games in the last couple of years, so I'll guess DeMarco Murray.
DeMarco Murray, 253 yards in 2011 versus the Rams, is ninth best all time.
Other active players with, we're talking 260 yards in a game, basically.
250 or better. 251 or better.
Actually. Arian Foster?
Arian Foster is incorrect.
Jamal Charles.
Jamal Charles has a 259-yard game from 2010. Did that against the Broncos. Hope I had him in my lineup that day.
You know, Doug Martin had one of those days,
Doug
right?
Martin.
His rookie year.
There's your other
against Oakland.
He had one against the Oakland Raiders, 251, which tied him for 10th best. So you've got all the active guys now. You want me to give you the rest?
I'll take one more guess.
All right.
I'll guess. Sean Alexander,
266 against also the Raiders. That one back in 2001.
After that, I'm lost. I mean, I would guess the guys that have gone for 2,000 yards.
You've gotten most of the obvious ones, except
so maybe an O.J. Simpson.
O.J. Simpson is the only non-obvious one. Went for he didn't do it in the year he went for 2,000. By the way, he did it, that was 73, I believe, when he had the 2,000 yards and his single game high of 273 came in 1976. The other two. That you didn't get, you did very well in the pop quiz. Mike Anderson.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's how good that Bronco rushing attack was. Mike Anderson had a 251-yard game that put him at 10th, tied with Doug Martin right now. And then Jerome Harrison, you remember that game?
What?
For the Cleveland Browns against Kansas City in late December of 2009, ran for 286 yards. And at the time, I guess the record, he was 10 yards shy of the record, 10 yards shy of matching the record that Adrian Peterson had already set.
Yeah, O.J. Simpson, never got to those two guys.
Yeah, O.J., by the way, is the only guy with two 250-yard games in his career. So
okay.
There you have it. There is your pop quiz today on single game rushing mark. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board and get into a little bit of Jaguar stuff with us today. As we told you, Dwayne Grott's back on the field. From what I'm gathering, good chance that Marquise Lee makes it back today. And, you know, apparently Tony Pacelli on Monday night said he expects him to play this week. I was talking with Brian Sexton earlier today, and he thinks there's a pretty good chance.
Good.
As well. That the leg injury, the hamstring, has been an issue. Certainly it's been keeping him off the practice field. But Marquise is a young guy. And he's never dealt with, had to deal with a ton of adversity, you know. By the way, Ozier just walked past you and flashed the guns. You didn't see it. Your back was turned. I was very impressed, as always. But we look at the idea that the Jags kind of need somebody to stretch the field. I don't know if I envision Marquise Lee being that guy, because my sense of him watching him in the summer was – good run after the catch, get him the ball in short spaces. Now, certainly, he has the ability to go deep. We saw that in the preseason. But whether it's stretch of the field or not, they just need more guys who can do something with the ball in their hands. They need more guys that can, you know, and it becomes a cliched term, but play above the X's and O's. You know, if the play calls for a 5-yard out, make a guy miss and turn that into a 15 or 20 yard play. You see it every week in the National Football League.
Sure.
And the Jags don't have a ton of that right now.
Well, they don't have anybody making those plays right now. And whether that's the youth or just, I don't know what it is, but it can't hurt to have Marquise Lee back in. We're talking about all the young pieces on this offense and having them all grow together at the same time. Well, Marquise Lee is missing out on that part of it. And maybe he can be the guy that stretches the field for this team coming out of the slot. I know he's going to be more effective at that than Mike Brown can be for this Jaguars team. He's a more athletically gifted guy than Mike Brown. So you want to see what it looks like when it is Allen and Robinson and Lee. I mean, that's basically where we're at right now with this wide receiver core, because Cecil's out, Mercedes is out, Clay Harbor's a young tight end too. I mean, there's not a whole lot of options for this Jaguars offense right now. Marquise Lee, maybe he's a bigger playmaker with Allen Robinson effective. You know, we don't know. We haven't seen them on the field at the same time really at any point in this season yet. So, and Marquise Lee was a guy that was, he looked lost running routes. I mean, lost. He needs to be on the field, if nothing else, just learning the speed of this game, because he looked like a puppy dog out there at times. I mean, it was just unreal. He would jog routes. He would stop routes short. He was, he and Robinson ran into each other on that Mercedes Lewis touchdown. I'm still not sure which one of them was in the wrong on the route, but I know they ran into each other on that long touchdown for Mercedes Lewis in Washington. So get him on the field. Let's get him back accustomed to this offense. And again, it's about 2015, Mike, and 2015's not any brighter with those guys on the sideline. They need to be on the field.
Oh, by the way, look at Cleveland's skill position guys right now. I mean, are they loaded? Didn't we look at them in the preseason, Tony, and say they have arguably the worst receiving core in the National Football League?
Sure.
Right? Josh Gordon, not back yet. Travis Benjamin, he's been an okay player in the NFL. He hasn't been any kind of superstar, caught the game-winning pass. They came back from 28-3 down. Now, they fell behind, but that offense was good enough to bring them back, and it's not led by a bunch of superstars. The difference is they were able to run the football against Tennessee. Will the Jags be able to do that? We'll talk a little bit more about Storm Johnson and his potential role coming up. If you want to get in, 641-1010. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today rolls on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Mike Dempsey with your JTech Drive of the Game. After forcing the Pittsburgh Steelers to an opening three and out, the Jacksonville offense got on the field with 13:25 remaining in the first quarter. Blake Bortles went to work from the Jacksonville 32, driving the Jags to the Pittsburgh 36, where they faced a key fourth and one.
Two tight ends set, one receiver to the right. It's an I formation. Jordan Todman is the I back. Interesting. Todman the I back on fourth in a foot. It is a quarterback sneak by Blake Bortles. I think he's got it. I think he leaned past the 35-yard line. That's going to be first down. The first time they have converted a fourth down, and it's a big one. First down, Jaguars inside the 35-yard line of Pittsburgh.
Following the successful fourth down conversion, the Jaguar drive would ultimately stall at the Pittsburgh 25 when they'd call on Josh Scobie to get them on the scoreboard.
This is a 43-yard field goal attempt for Josh Scobie. He is 3 of 5 on the season from the right hash out of the hold of Brian Anger with 5:25 to play in the first quarter and no score. The snap and holder good. Josh kicks it up. And he knocks it right through there, and the Jags have struck first.
15 plays, 43 yards, with 8 minutes and 8 seconds coming off the clock. Jacksonville led at that point by a score of 3-0. Blake Bortles going 5-for-7 for 45 yards on the opening drive, converting 2 third downs and 1 fourth down, and the Jags would have an early lead. The Drive of the Game has been brought to you by JTech, a new automotive, diesel, and truck driving school here in Jacksonville. JTech is driving the next generation of under-the-hood and over-the-road technicians and transportation professionals.
All right, here we go. Jaguars Today, Metro Rooter Wednesday, continuing the Jaguars photo contest brought to you by Foundation Professionals of Florida, continues on the Facebook page. If you want a chance to win tickets to next week's home game against Cleveland and a pair of passes to the 1010XL pregame party, all you have to do is post a photo in the thread on the Facebook page entitled Old School Jaguars, whatever that means to you. Go to facebook.com/Jaguars Today. And it's brought to you courtesy of Foundation Professionals of Florida, your full-service foundation repair company, 287-2690, foundationprosfl.com. My foundation, the house, just about the only part of the house I haven't had issues with this week. American Electrical is one of Joe Coward's sponsors. They were out at the house yesterday. I had to rewire the whole damn thing practically, Tony. I've had issues at the house. The plumbing, with the wiring, it's almost as if it was all set to fail at the same time. But it's all good now. I'm back up and running thanks to Metro Rooter, and on we go. Storm Johnson in the backfield. Don't know if he's going to start this week. It's an awful lot to ask a team to go out there with potentially Brandon Linder. I mean, even if Marquise Lee comes back, right? Let's say he's starting a three-receiver set. Allen Hurns, Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee, rookie. Luke Polanco, Brandon Linder, two offensive linemen, rookie. Blake Bortles, rookie. At six, Storm Johnson, that's seven.
Yep.
Right there. 7 out of 11 guys. As we talked about yesterday, Ryan Robinson had the numbers that no team in the National Football League last week started more than four rookies on offense and defense combined other than Jacksonville, and they could start seven on one side of the football this week. Clearly, Toby Gerhart's had diminishing returns for this football team. Now, he's been banged up, but being injured to me is okay. If you make the right cut and you don't have the burst to get there, there's not a whole lot you can do about it if your body's not going to allow you to make that. If you're not making the right cuts, the right reads in the running game, and we've seen one example of that, there are others out there, then, sure. You know, why not give the guy a chance? I just wonder, you know, what his pass protection is like right now. I mean, I wonder if they are going to run the ball enough, period, to make it matter in this game. But, man, seven guys as first-year players, 5-6 weeks into the NFL season, starting on one side of the football, and you wonder why this team has topped out at 17 points this year.
Sure. I mean, you don't have to wonder very long, and you're talking about seven guys. That doesn't include a second-year left tackle who missed most of last year because of an injury, who's making what would be his, seventh start now at left tackle in the National Football League coming up this week against Tennessee. I mean, look, the youth on the offense has been talked about a lot, and we talked about it in the offseason, Mike, and the questions and, you know, how it was going to come together on that side of the ball. We didn't know when we were going to see Blake Bortles. Obviously, he's come in now. They're past the Chad Henne part of the season, so we're to Blake. And you're still watching all of this try to grow up at the same time. And Storm Johnson being on the field, yeah, we only saw four carries from him last week for 27 yards, but what's wrong with going to a guy if you've gotten nothing as far as production out of that part of the game? And by the way, maybe the best-looking drive that you had from the standpoint of the team taking chunks of yards from the Pittsburgh Steelers came on a drive where Storm Johnson touched the ball twice, and then you got a screen pass to Toby Gerhart. I mean, that's the one drive they had where they were picking up chunks of yardage. So if he's going to provide a spark to that offense, because he is going to go pick up 8 or 9 yards, you know, every fifth time he touches the ball, which they have not gotten out of that running game, then he should be the guy at least getting that opportunity. The sense around here is that he probably will be when Sunday gets here.
I hope so. I mean, I want to say, because right now I think the protection for Blake has been adequate. You know, I don't feel like he's under siege back there in the pocket. And part of that is he gets rid of the ball quickly. Part of that is he's able to avoid the rush and has a pretty good sense of getting out of trouble and, you know, moving his feet and moving the different platforms in which he's going to throw from. But I don't get the sense like, oh man, the great fear is you throw Storm Johnson in there, all of a sudden, blitz pickup, he's going to get crushed out there. I mean, the Jags are dropping back more than 3-1 and throwing the football more than they're running. And I still don't get the sense that people are just pinning their ears back against this football team. I think that most people are just tightening up coverage within the first 10 yards of the line of scrimmage and guys are not getting separation. But it's not put, in my opinion, Blake Bortles in any kind of undue jeopardy.
No, I don't think so yet either. And I think when you look at the distribution of the snaps for the running backs in this game against Pittsburgh on Sunday, you're kind of seeing a picture of that, because Toby Gerhart was only on the field for 10 snaps. Storm Johnson was on the field for 8. I think the final number wound up being Jordan Todman was on the field for 24. He led the running backs in snaps during that game against Pittsburgh on Sunday. I think they're trying, like they have all season, to find answers for the problems that they have with this team right now. They know that there's a lot of youth on this offense, so there's going to be times where it just doesn't work. There's going to be plays where it doesn't work. There's going to be breakdowns. You hope that the breakdowns become more and more spread apart, basically. And what we saw early on in the season was on that offensive line, you would have three guys that had a mistake on one play. They'd get blown up on one play, and now you're talking about Chad Henne with no chance to make a play. Those kind of things don't seem to be happening anymore. They are learning on the job and getting better on a week-to-week basis, but they have no answer right now in the backfield. Storm Johnson is the only thing they haven't tried, essentially, so it's time.
Tennessee's on the other side of football. Tennessee's running game has not been anything close to dominant this year. They're good chance they'll be playing with a backup quarterback this week. They've got some dangerous weapons in the passing game, and we've seen a glimpse of Justin Hunter from time to time. He is far from consistent. Delanie Walker's been their best player this year on offense, at least their best skill position guy on offense this year. But I wonder if we're too getting wrapped up in the idea, all right, well, they played well against Pittsburgh. They finally started to get things resolved on that side of the football.
Back to back, we'll see.
We will, because, you know, you do see that on a week-to-week basis in the National Football League. How can this team play so well? And it's across the board. You know, I was talking with somebody this morning. They said, you know, they just feel like the Jags are getting better every week, and they're getting incrementally better. Well, that happens with other teams in the National Football League, too. I'm not saying, you know, I haven't followed Tennessee as closely enough to know if they're getting better every week. Certainly when you blow a 28-3 lead, that's not a good thing. But they were good enough to get out to a 28-3 lead. You could say the same thing about the Jags in the first week of the season against Philly. But, you know, there is that feeling this week that this one is, this is right for the picking. And as Dan Hicken went through the schedule this morning, if they don't get some in the next three games, the second half of the season, unlike last year the second half kind of lightened up. They played a ridiculous schedule in the first half of the season with, you know, four or five of the top teams in the National Football League. Well, it actually gets better this time around the second half, with the exception of the division games. You throw the Tennessee and the Houston games out, and Houston's better than certainly they were last year. Indy's always going to be tough. Not that the Jags can't play them tough. They didn't the first time around. But, you know, Cincinnati, Dallas is much better. The Giants, after a bad start, look like, honestly, to me, all kidding aside, because you know I love to pound the Giants because you're a fan, is they may be, to me, the most dangerous team in that division right now. I think Philly does it a little bit, not with smoke and mirrors, but they've been escaping a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I have the feeling Nick
that
Foles,
offense isn't what it was last year.
Nick Foles could just collapse at any moment.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not running the football with LeSean McCoy at all compared to what he did last season, the last really throughout his entire career. So now's the time. You know, they better be close, because it's not going to get any easier once you reach the halfway point. Just because your team may continue to improve, you're going to be playing teams that are going to start to get in that playoff mode down the stretch. You got Baltimore as another one. You know, late season game against a team that's going to expect to be in the playoff mix, and they're going to need these games. You're not going to be able to count on anybody overlooking anybody. And that shouldn't be what leads to victories anyway. You shouldn't have to count on anybody overlooking you at this point in time. I know the Titans feel they're getting a little help this week on the schedule. Well, the Jags feel the same way. None of that really matters. It matters how you play this Sunday afternoon.
No, and look, maybe the trend is you don't want a fourth quarter lead the week before you play the Jags right now, because it's come back to bite Pittsburgh and Tennessee in the last couple of weeks. We'll see if the Jags can take advantage of an opportunity this Sunday. I am curious to see, and Mike, we interact with the Jaguar fans on a daily basis here, obviously. I'm curious to see how the expectations continue to change as we go through this season. I think that the way they started 0-4, you saw people change what they thought this team was going to be. If you thought it was going to be a 7-8 win team, well, you pretty much give up on that at that point. They lose that game, but they're competitive against Pittsburgh. If they can do that in back-to-back weeks, maybe get a win against Tennessee, what are the expectations for this team for the rest of 2014, when it really feels like a product that is pointing towards 2015 with all the youth that they have on offense? And maybe the real barometer of this team is going to be, how good is this offense in December? You know, when they've had three quarters of a year to work together, what does this offense look like in December compared to what it looked like in September? That may be the real barometer.
And who's
for
on the field in December?
Right.
Right. I mean, is the offensive line stay intact? Does it stay healthy? And do you have Cecil Shorts in December? Do you have Mercedes Lewis back and at a point where he can contribute positively to this football team. A lot of those are big ifs. 641-1010. Ken is next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Ken. How are you?
Hey, doing well, guys. How are you?
Good. What's up, man?
Oh, not much. I just wanted to talk a little bit about, you guys have hit on a lot of good points about the youth on the offensive side of the ball. I do see the improvement in the offensive line. It still seems like we don't have too much time to throw the ball, and that the ball is getting to the receivers a little soon before they're done with their routes. And I'm still seeing a lot of drop balls, balls that are hitting people in the hands, you know, stuff like that. I'd like to see a little adjustment to the play calling. I think Fish is doing a good job of adjusting that, but it still seems like Blake doesn't have, you know, all the time for the routes to finish and receivers to finish off the plays.
Is it not enough time for them to finish it off, or are they just not getting the separation that they need in the time allotted? That, you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's more Blake has been very decisive with where he's going with the football for the last couple of weeks. I think he hits that back foot. He's made his read. The ball gets out of his hand, or he looks to move. And he'll extend the plays laterally behind the line of scrimmage at times, and we've seen that from Blake Bortles. But we've also seen him take off on some plays, too, before that offensive line really is collapsing around him. I think that Blake is doing the right thing in that he's reading the defense before he takes the snap. When he hits that back foot, the ball is getting out, and it's getting out on time. I don't think players aren't finishing their routes. I think that people in Jacksonville aren't used to seeing the ball come out on time on routes is honestly what I think it is. And when he's doing that with a bunch of young receivers who weren't used to that kind of thing when they were in college either, it looks a little bit more hinky than it will when everybody is used to the speed of the game. But I think that we were talking about it early on in the program. When you pause the tape, when Blake Bortles was letting the ball go, it's difficult to figure out where it's going to go because nobody's breaking their route. And that's good because the defense can't break on it either at that point. And the timing has been very good from Blake Bortles' perspective through the first two starts.
All right, we got to take time out. We'll come back. Dr. Stephen Lucy's got the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute injury report for the week. We'll look back on the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you, what are your expectations for the running game? If Storm Johnson does get the start this week, you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Lauren, or post your thoughts on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Time to take a look at what's impacting, well, potentially, your football team and your fantasy football teams this week. Time for the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Injury Report. Dr. Stephen Lucy here with us, one of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine provider of your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute, and Dr. Lucy joins us on the Garber Auto Mall hot seat. How are you, Doc? What's going on?
I'm doing good.
How's
nice
your thumb?
To be back.
How's your thumb, okay?
My thumbs are good.
Good? You can play video games. You can do all the things. You can hitchhike, whatever you need to
do.
You
know, I'm still not a thumb texter. You know,
are you not?
I think maybe I'm too old for that. I'm more of an index finger texter.
Really?
So I don't, you know.
So you hold the phone in one hand and then index finger with the other
one. Yeah,
like,
and it's not the fastest way to do it.
It's all right. I type with three fingers, and I'm quite comfortable doing
yes,
just
you do.
That. I'm quite comfortable. The reason we bring up the thumb, Jake Locker, he's got a thumb injury. Quarterbacks, it's sometimes just unavoidable. You've got helmets in the vicinity of where your follow-through is, and you hit that thumb on the helmet. A lot of times you end up getting an injury. Sometimes guys are able to stay in. But other times the thumb gets sprained, and I would imagine the ability to grip the football is compromised.
Yeah, it's key because as they're falling through, they very frequently are going to hit something. The worst is when they get it tangled up in the defensive lineman's face mask. But, you know, that's when he can not only just bang it, but he can bang it and twist it. But it's not uncommon. You know, most of these quarterbacks during a season, this is going to happen once or twice, hopefully not too severe.
What is, I mean, obviously different areas, different grades of thumb sprains. So what are we talking about? The thumb, is it bending back in an unnatural position? What's causing this kind of injury?
Absolutely. That's one way. And, you know, that's a frequent basketball injury where you sprain that big muscle down at the bottom of your thumb. And then on the inside of your thumb, there's a pretty critical ligament. It's almost like the MCL of your knee. And that helps you pinch. And tears to that can be very devastating and even require surgery at times. But for these quarterbacks, you know, with their throwing arm, I mean, having the thumb working is essential to accurately delivering the ball. So what may be a nothing to your tackle or your guard is a big deal to your quarterback.
If you are a QB and you play with a sprained thumb or a partially sprained thumb, whatever, I guess it's sprained, whatever the degree is, are you at major risk of re-aggravating it if you don't hit it again? Like just through your normal throwing motion, if you're out there, or is it on a kind of a case-by-case basis depending on the severity?
Well, you know, the part about the quarterback is most other players, you can brace it with some kind of a brace, but the guy throwing the ball, the best you can do is tape it. And,
right.
You know, if you think about the quarterback, how many times he hits the ground in any given, you know, sometimes he doesn't get touched, which we like to see, but he's falling, he's hitting, and it's a high injury incidence of him retweaking it, maybe not injuring it so severe, but certainly enough to where it takes some of the accuracy and velocity off the ball.
Look at Rashad Jennings, a former Jaguar, suffering what he himself has told people is an MCL sprain. Compared to other sprains, when you sprain your medial collateral ligament, again, degree is obviously something that we don't know in his particular case, but compared to other varieties of sprains in your knee, how significant is that?
Well, you know, MCL sprains, you don't ever like to get any of these injuries to the knee, but actually Dr. Pete Indelicato from over University of Florida in Gainesville was one of the people that figured out that we don't have to operate on them. In the early days, we were trying to sew them up. Dr. Pete figured out that we could brace them, and so the more severe sprains we're seeing return 3 to 6 weeks typically in the NFL. The milder ones, sometimes you can get them back in a brace in a couple of weeks. But again, that's the same deal as a quarterback. Your running back, who's dependent on planting and cutting, is a different animal that where you can put these huge braces on your linemen and let them go earlier.
You deal with a lot of athletes. How important is it, regardless of the injury? We're talking about whether it's an MCL sprain, a hamstring like Marquise Lee is dealt with. Just the confidence factor of trusting that it's as healthy as it needs to be, as opposed to it actually being as healthy as it needs to be.
You know, and that's a great point, because you've got your cautious players that don't want to go out and re-injure it. And then you've got the kind that's just, let me in, coach. I want to go, where you're holding them down because you're worried about them re-injuring it. But the more veteran, wily veterans in the NFL, their body is their temple, and they're not going to put themselves out there in harm's way, because, you know, they realize that these injuries can be career-ending or get them cut if they're not a top-quality player. So, you know, you have to depend on them to say, yes, I can go, yes, I can cut. You know, a lot of times you'll see them take them out right before the game and put them through their motion, and they won't be inactive till that final inactive deal, until you see on game day whether they're ready. So it's a lot up to them.
You came in today, said really not a ton new to talk about with this team. We got Dwayne Grotz back on practice field. That's a good thing, man. You know, this deep into the season, any point in the NFL season, if you don't have a laundry list that you don't have to go over, that's probably a positive, right?
Definitely. You know, when you get down to the end of the season, it's the healthier teams that are winning in the playoffs. There's no doubt about that.
What's your gut feeling? W this week? Breakthrough? What do we got, Doc?
You know, I think we got a great shot this week.
We all know we got a great shot, man. We got to see.
Hopefully we can come through.
Great. We had a great shot last week, too, as it turned out. You know, I mean, it was a one-possession game the whole way. Close. Let's get past the close. Let's get over the hump this week. Dr. Stephen Lucy here with us every Wednesday. One of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Dr. Stephen Lucy. Thanks, Doc. We appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you.
All right, there he goes. That's your injury report, brought to you by JOI for week 6 of the National Football League season. Today, the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Tony asking about Storm Johnson and his impact on the running game and what people's expectations would be in terms of productivity for the Jaguars as Storm Johnson got the start this week. What do you got?
From Kevin, we got, if Storm starts, maybe more cutback runs, but nothing major. Line needs to run block better. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Punisher, we got, I expect to see a running attack that storms through the Titans defense. Hashtag thunderstorm warning. From Area Man, we got, I expect nothing, and yet they still disappoint me. Hashtag Jaguars today. From at Irish Jaguar, we got a rushing touchdown of 15-plus yards and a total of about 80 yards. Hashtag Jaguars today. And from Nick, a lot more than we've been getting from Gerhardt. I would say 80 yards and a touchdown for Storm. Hashtag Storm warning. Hashtag ground and pound.
The bar is low right now on the Facebook page.
There is no bar.
They're right. The bar is on the ground, yet the one person continues to feel that it's not being leapt over. On Jaguars today on the Facebook page from Josh Richburg, probably around the same. Offensive line just isn't creating the holes, but I hope for improvement. Give the young guy more shots. Hashtag get better. Hashtag Jaguars today. Tap it out. Says, I think Storm will do better than Toby. Toby's a good back, isn't doing much. Storm's explosive, and he'll get the job done. We got from Shane Hanke, marginally less futile. That's a standard that shouldn't be that difficult to reach, we hope. Edward Painter says, not much better, but maybe. and then the other end of the spectrum, Don Enfuego says, totally expects a 4.5-yard average, but on like 10 or less carries. That's the question we've been talking about. What kind of commitment are they going to make to it? I think if you have some success, it's a lot easier to be committed to it. I'm not necessarily going to sit here and knock Jed Fish for being more than 3-to-1 pass heavy. That's crazy. It's over 75% of the plays being called through the air for this football team in a one possession game. It's kind of nuts when you think of it in that standpoint. But if you're running into a brick wall time after time after time, you know, the other question with Storm Johnson is, can he make it through a full game with a heavier workload?
Sure.
Healthy on that ankle. I mean, we haven't seen him out there much, and had to leave the game last week. If he's fully ready to go and he can handle the workload, I got to believe if he rips off some nice runs early in the football game, you feel a lot more confident about calling that. And then you can mix your play calling. Then the other team can't camp on, your outside guys as much. A lot of times in today's NFL, you pass the score, you run to win. And that's kind of the formula. You pass early, you run later. It can work both ways. It clearly has over the course of league history. Go out there and rip off a couple of 10-yard runs early and have them on the field. All of a sudden, that safety's got to start creeping up and worrying about them a little bit more.
Well, like you said, there's been no consistency. And this week it's Storm Johnson. Last week it was Denard Robinson. It looked like maybe he gave the offense a spark because he had two good carries. I mean, that's where the running game has been to this point. They're getting nothing out of Toby Gerhardt, and there's some disappointment in the fan base because of that, and it's completely understandable. And when you go back and watch what he's doing in the games, he's just not giving them enough. And because of that, they are looking at other options that they have on this roster. Storm Johnson's finally healthy enough to be the guy who is the logical guy to get that next opportunity with this Jaguars run game. He looked pretty good in the limited carries that he had against Pittsburgh. So let's see what he has. But that doesn't mean that he's the answer. It just means that he's the next guy available for them to try. And hopefully they can get to a point where they can run on first down and feel like they are going to get 4 or 5 yards. Because right now they're throwing a lot on first down because they don't have confidence in what that run game is giving them. And everything that Jed Fish does with that offense, it's predicated on creating time and being able to move that pocket for his quarterback by using that run game. We talked about it with the stretch play early. Why do they keep pounding their head against the wall with the stretch play? Well, because they want a bootleg. And they don't feel like they can effectively bootleg if that stretch play isn't working, if the defense has no respect for what they're trying to do in the run game. If you're wondering why it feels like the pocket's collapsing quickly on this team, it's because they still can't effectively move the pocket, because the run game isn't effective. They need that part of the game to work if this offense is going to be at the level they need it to be to start winning football games. So we'll see if Storm Johnson gives them the opportunity to get their game to that level. No, hopefully he does.
He's one of, to me, the three big storylines. Not necessarily the keys to the game, so to speak, this week, but the storylines to follow this week are the running back position. Is Storm Johnson going to get that shot to take the reins and be the guy because nobody's asserted themselves and nobody's performed to that level. Marquise Lee, will he be able to return and play this week? From everything I gather, it won't be Cecil Shorts back on the field yet, but can Marquise Lee get out there and at least give you another semblance of a threat? And Demetrius McCray, just because Dwayne Gratz is back, does Demetrius McCray just hang on to that position based on the way he played? I suspect that he does. How do they use Dwayne Gratz, and how does he come back as a competitor and try to play his way back in the rotation? Those are three areas we'll definitely be watching this week as the Jaguars look to get their first victory of the season after an 0-5 start. The last song, Sammy Hagar, Winner Takes It All, the theme's pretty evident and has been all day.
Let's go get one.
Let's go get one, and then go get two, and then go get three, but start with one. That's the obvious thing. We got XL Primetime coming up. Thanks again to Metro Rooter. Again, if they're sponsors of mine, they're sponsors of mine for a reason. I believe in the companies. I use them myself. I brought them to my place. They did a fantastic job. Showed up exactly when they said they were going to show up. Gave me fantastic customer service. Fixed all my issues. And now I don't have plumbing issues at the house anymore. We always say, we hope you don't have plumbing issues. But if you do, call Metro Rooter at 695-1911. Same day service, weekends included. The right people with the right equipment. Serving you here in Jacksonville since 1978. Our Wednesday sponsor here. Thanks to Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com. I know I don't speak for everybody when I say that, but we appreciate him on the Garber Auto Mall hotline, as well as Dr. Stephen Lucy from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute here on the Garber Auto Mall hot seat with your weekly injury report. Mark Long will be back next week. They've got issues over in Gainesville right now. Myriad issues.
No doubt.
And he's dealing with covering that team as he's splitting his time between Gainesville and Jacksonville. David Garrard scheduled to join us tomorrow. And then Ryan O'Halloran on Friday as the Jags leave for Nashville this Saturday afternoon. For Fat Tony, for Lauren Brooks, for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. This has been Jaguars Today. Coming up next, XL Primetime here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.